Welcome, everyone. This is Paul Niefer. I'm the host of the Farm CPA podcast presented by Top Producer. And today I am pleased to have join me Robert Barley, and he and his brothers and family farm in Pennsylvania, and their operation is called Star Rock Farms. Rob, welcome. How are things back in Pennsylvania?
Oh, things are pretty good right here. We've had just enough rain. Crops look good. We did have a little hail the other night, but I think we made it through with a minimal problems. It's a little too hot, but not extreme.
Yeah, we about 3 weeks ago, you know, we had that heat dome come here in the Pacific Northwest, and I think our high temperature was 117, 118. I know actually up in Canada, you wouldn't think of it being that hot in Canada, but there was a town to the west and north of us, almost over on the Pacific Ocean, that hit 121. At least now we're back into the 80s and 90s, so it's not too bad.
Wow, yeah, that's pretty hot. We got to the upper 90s, but we haven't seen 100, which we don't need to see 100.
No. And I got roped into playing in a charity golf, tournament. And that day, I think it topped out at 110 or 112. And that's as close as I've come to heat stroke. I don't want to go through that again. So I don't need that. Plus, my game isn't that good anyway. So, Rob, why don't you, I know you have a pretty good history of being, you know, a farm operation in your area, but go through, how did the farm start? I think you're now the third generation, but let's discuss briefly the first generation, the second generation, and then we'll get into the third, and then ultimately we'll discuss the fourth generation.
All right. Well, we consider my grandfather to be the first generation, even though his father was a farmer, but they never kind of, he didn't take over anything that he had. But my grandfather, he worked in the silk mills in the 20s and 30s and farmed kind of on the halves for a while. And then around 1940, he bought his first farm and still worked in the silk mills and steadily, was able to then become full-time farmer, you know, milking cows and growing tobacco. But I will say, he never quite had the was never big on risk. You know, he had went through the Depression, so he was very frugal and so on. And he did buy a few farms, but he was very slow to expand and slow to take risk. And then in the mid 60s, my father and uncle joined together and they started farming a large amount of tobacco. Eventually, took over my grandfather's operation. And continued to farm tobacco until about the mid 70s when they expanded dairy operation to about 300 cows. And then eventually that expanded to 500 cows. And they milked cows up through to about the mid 1980s when they actually went in the herd buyout. And that was about the time my dad had joined the Pennsylvania State House of Representatives, or was elected to House of Representatives. And they farmed, continued to farm land and then raised some beef cattle, finished some, you know, had a finished cattle in the old dairy facility. In 1992, my cousin and I took over then for my father and uncle, and we essentially purchased the cattle they had and the equipment and took over their line of credit. It was about a wash. We probably got, they actually maintained ownership, some of the equipment so that they could depreciate it out. But, they were kind of ready to transition on. Like I said, my dad was full-time in politics and, my uncle he's 6 years older and just ready to kind of step back a little bit. He worked for us, up until he developed an illness and died fairly young at age 66. But then, we continued to, you know, at the beginning we farmed ground and then had the beef cattle. Then about 2 years later, my brother graduated. Brother Tom graduated from high school and came into the business. And he wanted to do nothing but milk cows. So we started on a small dairy and eventually purchased a 300 cow dairy. And then in 2008, we built a brand new A brand new 800 cal dairy, which has expanded to 1500. And then in also in the early 2000s, about this, we purchased a sow unit, which we leased back to an integrator. And then in 2016, we actually took over management of that and have an agreement to sell the hogs. And in between, we ended up in early like 2012, we did purchase a large operation across the river. We are located in Lancaster County. This is in York County, where you have a 2,000 head feedlot. It did have an existing 400 cal robot barns, but when we purchased, the robots were gone, and has since become heifer housing for us for our dairy here in Lancaster County. So we continue to be fairly diversified in different things, I think that's served us well. Anytime it hasn't, when all are bad. So
yep. No, and you mentioned robotics. I was up in New York visiting some friends that has a dairy operation up there, and he uses the robotics. And it was just interesting seeing the cows, you know, they get in there, and then, you know, the robotics are pretty gentle. But once in a while, I remember I was watching one cow, and it ended up falling down, and it's jumping around, but it was fine. So it was, with labor these days, you know, any time that you can, you know, eliminate that labor cost. And it isn't necessarily the cost, it's just being able to find labor, and, you know, the immigration policies right now and so on. It's just tough dealing with labor.
Yeah, I would say for us, we have looked at the robotics from time to time. It's not, you know, I wouldn't say recently we've had the easiest time, but we haven't really had an issue where we can't find people and can't find help. But at this point, you know, when you run the numbers, it seems like you're better off, you know, still doing it the old fashioned way with humans. But I'm sure there'll be a point where that changes. And as wages continue to increase, it may come sooner than later.
Yeah, so. It's like out in our state, we just passed a bill that you now have to pay time and a half overtime. Now it's being phased in over a couple of years. Our minimum wage is almost somewhere in the $13 range, but, you know, to hire anybody, you have to pay for ag or anything, you have to pay $15, $16, $17 otherwise.
We're in the same place here.
It's just crazy. Now, I know that you have these different operations. You know, you got the hogs and the cattle and the dairy and I think you do you still do the broilers for Purdue and so on? Is that
we do not. We actually sold that operation, and we no longer are in broilers. So,
as a matter of fact, my wife bought 40 meat chickens about 8 weeks ago, and I think they're going to be processed this Sunday, and I happen to be out of town, so.
Very good.
I don't know how that happened, but it happened. But I think, you know, one of the articles I was reading is that you have multiple entities set up for these different operations. Can you just review what type of entities and what operations and why you did it that way?
Okay. Yeah. Our original entity, which was first the Star Rock Farms Partnership, then became Star Rock Farms LLC, did own. Well, did manage the broiler operation, so that's no longer a part of it. But currently they have a 2,000 head beef feedlot that we raise cattle for, a custom feedlot, raise cattle for a large packer. And then we had owned some hogs in that entity, but have transitioned all the ownership of our hogs. And we finish about 100,000 hogs a year. All coming from our 4,000 head sow unit. Have a marketing agreement to sell that to a large packer here in Pennsylvania. Probably can figure out who it is. like I said, with our agreement, our management team here, that's going really well. So that's Green Valley Swine, and that's a name that kind of came with the place. And then we have an entity, Star Rock Dairy Incorporated, which is strictly the dairy operation, the cows and the heifers, does not own or farm any land, buys all its feed from Star Rock Services, which is our cropping entity and sort of our management entity. They would haul the manure, all those types of things. And then additionally, our largest value, of course, is in our barley farms LP, which is our real estate entity. And the way we have it set up, Barley Farms then owns all the real estate we own, and then would lease to either dairy or LLC or services, depending on whether it's farmland, whether it's the dairy facilities, whether it's the beef finishing facilities. And then additionally, inside of Star Rock Farms LLC, they own all the equipment, which is then leased to the other entities as well. And that has done, has helped us to really, really see where things are working. You know, some of our challenges with the dairy and the services, should the dairy buy from the services at cost, or should they buy at market? So it makes a difference, you know, and if you're benchmarking against local dairies, they're considering their corn price right now to be, you know, $4.75, $4, because that's the cost it was to raise, or, you know, but right now we're getting seven something here. So, you know, so where, so we have, that's always a discussion we have on how to make that work. And we essentially carry, we will do a side set of books for the dairy if they're doing benchmarking, to, so they're matching up kind of apples to apples with other operations. And it can work the other way, hasn't in a while, where essentially the corn price is below cost of production, so then the dairy would actually be getting, taking advantage of that. So
yeah, I'm just curious, because I know some of our clients and some of the people I talk to, because I do a fair amount of FSA planning, you know, Farm Service Agency planning, and, you know, last year with CFAP, and then the year before with MFP. Did you run into any payment limits because of your structure, or were you able still to go ahead and maximize those payments? I'm just sort of curious on that.
Well, we are, and I worked with Kennedy and Co. to set this up in our cropping operation, but it is a partnership.
Yeah.
Originally, it had been an LLC, which was then we did run into payment limitations. But then the three of us are single member LLCs inside the
GP,
inside the partnership.
Yeah.
So, it's just a general partnership. So it's just a general partnership. And so in that side, not so much, the dairy, of course, is actually a corporation. It's actually an S corp. We did run into it there, but we were essentially, you know, with the three of us, we were essentially going to, and it hadn't been a problem till, you know, these last programs, because really the dairy wasn't getting much. Hogs never really got any. So yes, we did kind of had, you know, I guess in hindsight, if I knew it was all coming, maybe we could have done something. But, you know, I think we made out pretty well through those payments, and I'm not here to complain. So,
well, and some of the people that have talked to me, what do we need to do to change our structure? And I'm like, I think that was a one-shot deal. I mean, I would, because the problem with changing your structure on some of these entities, you're talking a huge tax liability. I mean, potential tax liability.
Yep.
So, sometimes you lost a little bit, as far as a payment, you still, like you said, you still made out pretty good. So
I'm not really that familiar, but I know out in the Midwest, that, you know, family members, you know, other family members come into the partnerships to get multiple payment limitations and so on. I just went through an FSA audit, and I don't know, I could legitimize that, because they were pretty, I mean, it was not a problem, but they were pretty fussy about, you know, what was your contribution and so on. So I think they're really cracking down on that. So to say that our wives were part of it, we would have to really be, not that they don't do anything, But to the level that they were asking for, that would be a dishonest, you know.
Technically, there is a special, we're sort of getting off subject, but it's a good subject to go over. You know, there is a special spousal exemption that says as long as they provide capital or they're part of the ownership, they actually don't have to provide any hours. Oh, okay. Now, if you bring in your kids are different. I mean, then right. They have to provide the management or the labor, but the spouse actually can not provide any labor at all and still qualify for an exemption. Now that just means, you know, they don't get extra money. It's just potentially you would qualify for a higher limit. So,
right. Okay.
Now, does having these entities the way you've set it up, and we'll probably discuss this maybe a little bit later on, does it make it easier for transition to the next generation, or does it make it a little bit more difficult?
Well, no, I think it will most likely make it easier because where the true value lies, and it's similar to how we transitioned with my parents, where, you know, we took over the actual, active entity, but they maintained ownership of the real estate until about 10 years later. Something like that could happen here as well, where we continue to own the real estate and began to maybe start transitioning that slower with notes and with gifting and so on and so forth. And, you know, where the operating entities can transition much quicker. And, you know, they've already kind of moved. Some of the kids have already moved themselves into certain areas where, you know, my cousin Abe, his daughter is more with the crop side. My son, who works part times but more in the cattle and hog side, I have a daughter that's helping out with calves, and you know, there's areas there within different entities that could make that happen, and that also gives opportunity for more management roles, and that's kind of where we're working now. As well. So,
yeah. And, you know, looking at your operation just, you know, in a 30, 40 year period or less, you've grown it, you know, quite a bit. Let's just discuss that growth. I guess what I'd like to know is what do you think you did right in order to accomplish that growth? What did you think, what was the one thing maybe that led you to the best growth?
Well, I think for us, I'll never forget the year after we were top producer finalists. I was on a panel with Lon Fromm. I think I got that name right. Maybe
yep,
not.
Yep.
Yeah. And I got asked a question about my business plan and so on. And, you know, we have something, but I said, ours is flexible because, you know, opportunities come along on a regular basis and they're not part of our business plan.
Yeah.
But they're too good to pass by. Lon kind of laughed when the question went to him. He said, "Boy, I'm glad you had that question first, because I was afraid to say that and you said it." So, but yeah, there's no doubt about it that I think, you know, being flexible and finding other opportunities, being able to work, we've been able to work with some families over the years that were transitioning out that some people maybe couldn't work with, and we were able to successfully work with them and, you know, not necessarily buy their assets or anything at a discount, but at least get the opportunity there. I think that's worked for us. We're not afraid to go into other entities. You know, back when we took over, we were hauling a significant amount of biosolids and getting paid very well to do it. That kind of went, that time kind of passed as some other larger entities came in and made it less valuable to do it. Yeah. So we moved on, and then, we get a large, we get a fair amount of a byproduct that makes really good feed. We get it at a fairly low cost, And that was why we got into hogs. And so we started feeding a few hogs, and then, you know, the opportunity came up to purchase this sow unit because the guy that had owned it for a long time and didn't want to make some investment that was necessary, made that investment. And, you know, that has worked out well for us, and it's given us an opportunity to feed hogs at a little lower cost than the competition out there because of the byproduct that we have. And then, you know, in our dairy operation, just being able to, you know, first buy the one farm that was already set up at a reasonable price and be able to milk cows there, and then, you know, transition to a new facility. And through that process, one of the things that I think was so important, and I think is the reason we have a lot of good consultants and have worked with a lot of good consultants. We were looking at placing a dairy facility, had a couple places in mind, and showed the consultant, the site consultant, went around and, do you have another one? And we showed him the next one. We had like three lined up. Do you have another one? You know, and then finally we were out of options, and we're like, well, we could put it such and such place. And he came over and said, this is where you need to put it. And he was right. He picked the right spot. It was the place where it needed to be. We originally at that point, were looking at the possibility of a sort of like a tunnel ventilated barn. Well, we were up on top of the river hill where you always have a breeze. And we have one of the most, you know, we have a barn that handles the heat about as well as any barn out there, just because of the location, the breezes that come up through there. And, I mean, it's set up well, it's a high clean barn, but, you know, I would say taking advantage of opportunities and having good advice from, you know, certainly from our fathers to start with, but, you know, through other folks throughout the years, certainly, have had a lot of good advice from different people.
Yeah, you mentioned the opportunity. I think, and I've said this a couple of other times, like on our podcast, is when you really make your money isn't when times are good. Yes, you want to bank that money, but if you bank that money, save that money, have that money, then when times are bad, that provides those opportunities. Now, you don't want somebody to be in trouble or anything, but you know that's when you actually and make the most money, is when times are bad, not necessarily when times are good. So now to go the opposite track, you know, we've discussed maybe the good side. Has there been anything that you did wrong?
Well, I would say the biggest challenge we've had over the years occurred following kind of 2018. I mentioned we had purchased a very large operation in the early 2000s, well, like 2012. And, you know, it was a big chunk. And, you know, honestly, when we purchased it, our plan was to, you know, sell some other ground and so on and so forth. Well, you know, what happened in 2012, 13, 14, timed it pretty good, real good. And we didn't really have to. And as we got into 2018, and you know, we were doing okay, but we weren't necessarily right sized with from the bank standpoint. We had to make some changes, and we had to, you know, liquidate some property, which we had and which we did, and didn't lose, not like we lost money on any of it, but. I think with the way the banking industry operates now, I remember the first banker that came in here. He on a napkin, he told me to lay out, you know, kind of our numbers and so on. And in 5 minutes, he said, "Yeah, you're good to go." And and that just doesn't happen anymore.
No, it definitely does not happen.
You're not even dealing with we have, you know, our local banker, ag banker, and a very strong bank that deals with, you know, the farming industry. But they're not always the one making the decisions. Right. And, you know, they got covenants that they have to put in place. And, Farms don't always have a good year every year. And then those covenants need waived and it starts getting you. And so I think what we realized is we need to strengthen our balance sheet. You know, as Mo Russell says, bulletproof the balance sheet. Yeah. And I think we've done that here in the last couple of years. And it kind of goes to what you were saying there earlier, be ready for it. That helps us even be more ready for opportunities. And that, I guess that's a lesson we learned. And with the good times coming right now, put a little bit of that away, and make good, smart decisions, to another speaker that I've also listened to, Dr. Cole, you know, getting those big toys out there. Yeah, so we're not going to go buy a bunch of toys. So,
yeah, it's too easy to make dumb decisions when times are good, you know, so that's true. Now, I guess, and I think we all learn from our mistakes. That's how we learn. At least I learn better from a mistake than I do from a success. Would you do anything over if you look back on it? Would you do anything over, or is it just, hey, that's part of being in business?
Well, I will say through that period of time, it strengthened our partnership. We got a little more honesty, maybe out of each other.
Yeah.
I guess, I wish we wouldn't have had to go through that, and I don't want to go through it again, but it did, we learned a lot. And so I guess in some ways, yes, I would probably change that. I would be more proactive, you know, and understanding that, you know, that side of things. But what we learned through it's probably some of the reason we're in better shape now than maybe, you know, we've been in a long time. And so I guess kind of what you're saying, if everything is always good, you don't ever really learn to get better. You don't get tough, and you don't, you know, learn to, you know, to do the things that are necessary. So,
Exactly. Well, Rob, right now we're actually going to take a quick break. We're going to have a message from our sponsor, and then we'll come back to having a discussion right after the break.
Get timely updates about taxation, accounting, succession planning, and other issues that are unique to farmers and agribusiness processors. Find out about major agribusiness events and how to comply with new laws that affect your business. Subscribe to Farm CPA at blogs.claconnect.com/agribusiness and experience the CLA promise. blogs.claconnect.com/agribusiness.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Paul Niefer. I'm the moderator for the Farm CPA podcast presented by Top Producer. And we're going to go ahead and continue our conversation with Rob Barley. So, Rob, the one thing being a CPA that I really like is the fact that you've taken advantage of, in my opinion, taken advantage of managerial accounting to help manage your farm operation. I think a lot of farmers, they sometimes view accounting as sort of being the necessary evil. You know, the banker needs it, or we need it to prepare the tax return, and they really don't embrace it as a management tool. Can you go into, you know, why you use it, why you decided to use it, and so on?
Well, I guess to some degree, how we got to doing it is not necessarily because of what you're saying there. We were actually working with the Farm Bureau, and they were an accountant, and probably stayed with them a little too long. I think they do an excellent job. We got a little too big and maybe a little too complicated for their resources. And there was a property that we had that we were selling at more than what it was worth for, you know, essentially a landfill. And the idea was this was supposed to last a fair amount of time, and we were going to be able to manage the income over 15, 20 years. And so they had an option on it, and things changed and all of a sudden they exercised their option. Mm-hmm. And so we were stuck with some significant amount of income and not really. And a lot of the income was going into our parents because they still own the fair amount of the real estate.
Right.
And so we need to figure out a way to save some tax. And that's when we brought in the current firm that we're working with, Acuity and CPAs, which was Steve Hipschman and Mike Peachy, the one I think that you've worked with.
Yeah.
And they helped us get through that process. And part of that process was setting up some separate entities for tax reasons. But in the end, they ended up being very helpful from, you know, a managerial accounting. And that, so it was, you know, kind of a blessing in disguise, I guess. And, you know, we've had to make some changes with them in what the entities were for different reasons and so on and so forth. But essentially, we separated out our entities. And yes, we can very much. It's a much easier to understand what's working, what's not working, you know, why, and so on and so forth. And we have, you know, we have embraced it here. We have our accounting staff. Every bill is allocated not only to the right entity, but also the right category within the entity. And it, you know, there's has to be POs on everything.
Yep.
You know, we, you know, very concerned about whether we are capitalizing something or not and so on. And that's been frustrating sometimes for the guys out in the field having to, if they didn't do what they were supposed to on the paperwork, they get a call and that's not something they want to deal with.
Yeah,
they've learned to not growl so much. it's been great. And then, you know, essentially on a monthly, quarterly, you know, annual basis, we can look at things and find out where our issues are and get answers that we can trust. And as time goes on, it's more and more that we can trust, you know, these answers. And,
right.
And then even on top of that, we have certainly in the dairy operation, a strong record keeping in their internal systems and, you know, the systems they have. And then on the cropping side with my John Deere and Granular, we use both of those. So that has helped us. We have learned that we worked with like a farm works for many years and transitioned out of that into FBS and mm-hmm. and we worked with that, tried kind of do the same thing where you're managing you're doing your managerial, some of your managing stuff inside your accounting, and we have learned that it's helpful to have some information in there, but to have every little piece in there gets complicated. So we still, you know, work in my John Deere and Granular to help, more so Granular now, to understand, you know, the down to the acre and so on cost, rather than we're not overwhelming the office staff that doesn't necessarily understand all that stuff. And I think that separation, although they work together, that separation has helped us, you know, to kind of look at things two different ways. So,
yeah, I think the concern that we have as accountants is when we're dealing with the accounting system, we don't want a lot of noise in there, you know, and sometimes you take that management information, and if you dump too much into the accounting system, it creates that noise that sort of, you know, we just want nice, clean data inside of the accounting system. Like you say, with Granular, whatever it might be, Conservice Granular, you can get down to that per acre, but in the accounting system, you don't want to deal with per acre, you know, on everything, because then you just create this voluminous, I'm almost going to call it a mess. So I think that's good. Now, do you do all this on your own, or is there some outside help? I mean, I'm guessing there was probably outside help from Acuity to get it set up and so on, but are you doing it all on your own now, or is some of it being done by other people?
Yeah, the only thing really, we draw on Acuity from time to time with some of their expertise. They certainly prepare our annual statements, the reviewed statements, but, you know, less and less. There's more and more in-house here from the farm management side. My son-in-law pretty much manages that, and certainly works with the folks at Granular and the folks at John Deere, to make sure everything's working right. But more and more of that is pretty much he's taking care of that as well. He has a data entry person that he also works with on day to day stuff, because he does our scouting, runs, sprayer from time to time. He runs other equipment as well. So more busy in the fields, he's in the fields. I think we've gotten better and better at doing ourselves, but we still have folks to fall back on. And I don't think we'd ever want to totally cut those cords. Because, there's some stuff that they continue to have and information they have and stuff that they expertise that they have, that if I wanted to have all that, I'd need to hire too many people.
Yeah, no, and a lot of times, what you enjoy doing, your highest and best use is working on the farm operation, not necessarily cranking out, financial statements and so on. So everybody has their role in those operations. It's just, I know that as you get larger, the accounting function, the management accounting function can actually, I won't say it's a profit center, it's never a profit center, but it can help you make more informed, better decisions than not having good accounting data. So I think you guys are probably taking advantage of that.
Yeah, that's certainly true. And as I mentioned, the more accurate it gets, and the more you can trust those numbers, then you can pull that trigger without a second thought.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Now let's sort of transition, I guess that might be the right word, into succession planning. You discussed briefly, that transfer from generation 2 to 3, where generation 2 sort of maintained the land base, but as far as the operating entities, they sort of were transferring that over to your generation. Now you got generation 4 coming up. Just go through what your plans are on that transition, maybe what some of the steps you maybe have taken or are planning on taking.
Well, let me just back up just a little bit to the transition from 2 to 3. We still have notes with our parents.
Okay.
And we have life insurance on them. The notes will be inherited by the respective children. That's the other little unfortunate part when you have, cousins, but we have that worked out. We have the parents' wills in order that it all works out, and our non-family siblings will be compensated through the life insurance that's been in place for a fairly long time. So that, although it hasn't, I wouldn't say it's been perfect. It's worked us well. We actually never really paid much of their principal down, but have been paying interest, and that's what they live on.
Yep. That's retirement plan.
Provides them a good income. And they can call up to 5% a year. They don't call a whole lot, but they have the time from time to time. And so that has worked out well for us. It's we'll probably follow a template that, is along that line, but certainly is going to be different now that we have, we have the two brothers and a cousin. So we now are going to have second cousins working, first and yep. second cousins working yep. together. And, so the first thing we did was develop a family employment policy, and that has served us fairly well. The kids, I think, understand it. They've heard it a couple times, and then they, certainly when the time comes, they ask for a refresher, and even sometimes I need to go back to it and look at for a refresher. But that helps us to, bring the kids into work, but then their role into as managers, and they've already taken those steps. There's three of them now managing different aspects. My son-in-law, my cousin's daughter, and then my son in a part-time basis is managing a couple of different areas as well. So that's step one. We are actually scheduled here to do, to kind of begin on the, you know, the step of where the total family transition. We do have life insurance on the three of us. Mm-hmm. That will be part of that. It's already in place. We have, we will continue those notes. Otherwise there'll be a tax consequence if we don't. So we're going to continue those notes, and work through some other, you know, possibilities. Part of what we're figuring out now, what do the three of us want? You know, what are we going to be okay with? So, and none of us, I think, are looking for full value at by any stretch of the imagination, but, figuring out what's, you know, what works and so on. And we're both talking, we're all three talking, you know, 5 to 10 years, mm-hmm. you know, not necessarily walking away, but stepping back to some degree. And so, so that's where we're at right now. I don't have the roadmap, you know, totally laid out yet, but we have a lot of good ideas from what we've learned, what we've seen. You know, it's always about, and I guess once we know the new tax rules, that'll change with the next administration as well. We can at least make a plan for today.
Well, that's a good segue, you know, because I was going to ask you, I think maybe you've seen what some of the proposals are, and they use the word eliminating step up. No, they're not eliminating step up. They're just making you pay a tax to get step up and some of the other things. Do you think that it would materially change your succession plan, or is it that, hey, this might happen now, but 5 years from now, if we get a new administration, it's going to change again? Or I'm just curious what your thoughts on what some of those proposals are.
Well, I guess to answer your first question from a sort of a philosophical perspective, I can't pick when I'm going to die. I die today, I'm probably better off than if I die in a year if this stuff is implemented. Yeah. But you know, and maybe they're even talking about backdating the implementation of some of this stuff. So maybe I can't die today. Maybe I should have died a year ago. But I think you got to be prepared for today, because so that we'll have to make changes. You know, how drastic, you know, I guess we'll have to weigh the risks. And, you know, certainly at this point, I hope that, you know, clear heads prevail. It does seem like
it appears that now you have a senator next to your state, Senator Manchin, and some of these other ones really do not like the idea of the transfer tax for farm operations and closely held businesses. I think they're okay. Hey, if Warren Buffett passes away and he's got $100 billion worth of Berkshire Hathaway, and you're going to pay a capital gains tax on that because it's liquid, I think most Congress people are probably okay with that. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but the idea that you got a farm operation and just due to the fact that you pass away, now you owe this 40% tax on income and then possibly an estate tax on top of it, that's going too far.
Yeah. I agree 100%.
Yeah.
I agree 100%. And I, like I said, I think you're right. I think, you know, with Senator Manchin, and I know certainly folks, I've heard Tammy Baldwin wanting carve outs for farmers. So, you know, there's plenty of Midwestern, I think, you know, all the Republicans are pretty much against it. So we might as well not even talk about them, but we have to bring some on board. I think at the very least, we'll get some carve outs for the farmers that are beyond what's already been put forth, because what's already been put forth is not really going to cover the majority of farmers, even though their record keeping said it would cover 98%, and Texas A&M said it would not cover 98%. So kind of pretty far apart there.
Well, I'm going to say it's sort of apples and oranges, because the problem with USDA's database is 8% of their farmers have revenues less than $5,000. So yes, it would cover that 98%. But what we traditionally think of as the farmer that is relying on the farm for their livelihood, 98% of them would be effective. Affected by this proposal. So, yeah, and we're getting sort of to the end of the podcast, and I always end with a couple questions. You know, the first one is there anything that keeps you up at night? Something that you worry about on the farming side?
Well, I will tell you this. Early on in the operation, I've always handled the financial side of things. I've always kept it to myself, and learned that I can't do that. But I would worry and so on and so forth. And at one point, you know, as I was reading through scripture, I learned the right thing is to turn that over to the Lord. Yeah. So I sleep. I don't have any trouble sleeping at night. I turn that over to the Lord and I can get to sleep. Now, and it's not that I don't worry about stuff, and there's certainly some things right now, you know, that are a challenge for us. I mean, what does the future hold, you know, with these tax proposals? What does the future hold from, you know, what's the next big change? I mean, you know, we're constant from a dairy industry. We're seeing a real transition to a lower cost structure in the Midwest with the large dairies, and here in the Northeast, you know, I'm the Pennsylvania Milk Marketing Board chairman, and it's just a challenge to see how we can continue to make things work with a generally smaller herd size here, one of the smallest in the nation. And so, yeah, that bothers me, because those families really, really care about, you know, what they're doing. They care about their farms, they care about their cows, and they just become, you know, in a structure that's tough for them to compete. So, you know, I guess I have more concern there than anything. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that was it.
It does. And, you know, it's sort of curious. You know, I think a lot of times when we hear Pennsylvania, we don't necessarily think of ag country. I mean, or maybe we think of the Amish, which I know are in your area. But, you know, in the census book that the USDA puts out every 5 years, they list all the counties' revenues from farming. And historically, you know, California counties, there's like 10 or 12 counties that have substantially more than $1 billion of farm income. But I think it's either your county or a county in your area is also
Lancaster
one of those counties.
Is
over $1 billion in revenue.
Yep.
So it's there is a lot of ag in your area, and very beautiful ag too. I've been through that area, and it's almost as pretty as where I live. So I'll say that. So and then you know, we're going to end with my last question that I always ask, and you know, what is your definition of success in farming?
Well, you had sent me that question ahead of time, and we have a mission statement, and so I'll read that. I thought that kind of answered the question as much as well as anything. And our mission statement is to produce quality agriculture products in efficient, well-managed, and progressive operation, accomplishing this while maintaining a safe, friendly working environment for employees, seeking to develop and maintain open and honest relationships with employees, vendors, professionals, and neighbors. And, you know, doing all this in a profitable manner. So,
I think that's a very good definition. So, well, before we go, Rob, is there anything else that you want to add, or anything that we haven't covered that you want to make sure that we get in the podcast before we finish up?
No, I think we covered a lot of good things, and I appreciate really have looked to you on some of this, the issues that we're hearing from a tax standpoint and how we're going to pay for all these programs.
Yes, so, I know.
You know, I guess we're not here to talk politics, but at some point we need to stop spending money.
Yeah. So I guess the only thing good about these tax proposals, it gives me plenty of stuff that I can talk about in the blog. So that's to me the only good thing about it. And actually that's not that good either, but I at least I won't say I enjoy writing about it, but I you know, that's, I guess that's my passion, is just to understand how this affects our farmers out there, and hopefully come up with some ideas that can help mitigate, help reduce that cost if we can. So with that, we'll go ahead and end this podcast. Again, Rob, thank you very much for participating, and hopefully I'll see you sometime in the future.
Sounds good. Thanks for including me.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. I'm Paul Niefer, and we'll be back next week with a new episode of the Farm CPA podcast with Top Producer.